I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Bridge Street Capital Partners is a Sydney-based corporate advisory firm that specialises in equity capital market transactions for small cap companies listed on the ASX, primarily in the mining, energy and tech sectors. If you are a Section 708 sophisticated investor and would like to be on Bridge Street's distribution list for their upcoming capital raises, please send them your details via an email to invest@bridgestreetcapital.com.au and mention the BIP show in your message. Now on with the show. How are you now? Broadcasting from the VFS studios at Northbridge in sunny Sydney, where the sun has literally just come out. You are listening to the all-new BIP Show, Season 4, Episode 7. Don't forget to hit subscribe and rate us wherever you get your podcasts. And a reminder that all the financial information in this podcast is general in nature only. Speak to a professional advisor about your needs. Coincidentally, that is what I do. I'm James Whelan, Investment Manager at VFS Group, and I will be your host today for this amazing adventure that we have. And literally, the sun has just come out on Sydney. Has it just come out on the Sydney property market? Does it matter? The Sydney property market has gone sensationally well. But just so that I could date and timestamp this, this episode of the BIP Show is being recorded in Sydney. It is 11:03 on April the 8th. We've done it. Congratulations, 2022 AD. Now, I am joined today by Cameron Kusher, who's the executive, and I had this up a second ago, executive manager for economic research at REA Group. And I haven't spoken to Cameron since probably we did the live show on the old Devils and Details live show. Cameron, how are you now? Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, James. I'm well, thanks. Yourself?
Yeah, mate, not so bad. Wouldn't complain, especially since the sun has just come out and I'm sitting in a dark room. So it's the reason I keep on harping on about it, I've got one line of sight out of where I'm recording this that just shows that there's sunshine that's going on the tree at the front of my place. I've got to get there amongst it. We've had too much rain. Sydney has been underwater. Speaking of underwater, that's an awful lead-in. I'm sorry about that. The property market. But anyway, look, I don't think it is underwater. I think it's peeled off a bit. We're going to dig into that a little bit with you. First off, the note that went around, Bill Evans, Westpac, chief economist, is effectively the RBA, as far as I'm concerned. When he says stuff, it is effectively the RBA's views. So I know that's a little bit cynical, but come and prove me wrong. He came out with a note yesterday or Wednesday or even the day before, it could have been, I don't know, it's all been a pretty blurry week, about the RBA tightening cycle, which he thinks will begin in June, which means it will begin in June. They see hikes in most months in the second half of 2022 and the cash rate peaks at 2% in June 2023. So they see that. So year's end cash rate of 1.25%. And the cycle will peak by mid-2023, around 6 months after the peak in the federal funds rate. Cameron, now, a lot of people, we had Adelaide Timbrell from ANZ Bank on the show last week, and she, I put her in the place of what do you do if you are going to be the, if you're head of the RBA, or when one day you are the head of the RBA. She's extraordinarily intelligent, and I'm sure she'll get there one day, but and she said that they were maybe moving a little bit too slow. And so is this them playing catch up? But specifically to you, how does it relate to property markets and how's it changing your outlook?
Yeah, I think obviously, as you said, Bill Evans has come out and called June and most people are now calling June. We were a little bit more reluctant to move to a June hike. And the reason is it would be a change from what the RBA has been saying. They've been saying they're going to look through inflation. They want wage growth to pick up. But I guess in some ways they could end up being bullied by the market that everyone is expecting interest rates to lift in June and then they will. The thing I probably take exception to is some of the forecasts of how quickly interest rates will be lifted. And the reason for that is there's a couple of things. So CBA came out recently and said they've got a million borrowers, mortgage borrowers, that have never experienced an interest rate hike. But also just the behavioural change when interest rate hikes take place. So we know that the idea of lifting interest rate is to slow the economy. And if they're going to go a full 1% hike over the next 6 to 9 months, then they do run the risk potentially of overcooking that and lifting rates too quickly. So I'm probably of the view that while we might start to get interest rate hikes in June, they could take a more slow and measured approach to doing that and just see what happens as those interest rates do get increased. Now, we know they do like to go a couple of months in a row, so I wouldn't be surprised to see that. But I just question whether interest rates will rise as rapidly as some of the expectations are out there. And I think that the Reserve Bank will want to see what impact those first few rate hikes do have on the broader economy, but also obviously housing is a big part of the broader economy as well, and what impact that has there.
Yeah, so it could easily be a one and done, and I won't disagree with you on that, or even a two and done sort of situation, depending on what the correction, if there is a correction, they don't necessarily go hand in hand. But slowing this economy, we could talk about wages. It's a whole different conversation probably that we'll have. Now, Cameron, let's go around the grounds, and I want this to be sort of a state of the states. We'll start. You're in Queensland, aren't you?
I am in Queensland, yes.
Let's start with Queensland, and then we'll go anti-clockwise, if that's possible, and talk about each state, your prediction, how it's going, what you see.
Yeah, so Queensland, the market's still quite strong up here. We're still seeing prices rise, but they're not rising at the same pace as they were sort of mid to late last year. So some of the heat's definitely come out of the market. One of the really common trends right across the country is there's a lot more supply coming onto the market as well. So there's not that level of desperation to just grab whatever is listed for sale as there was, again, sort of 6 to 9 months ago. People have got a little bit more choice. A lot of people have purchased, and some of the heat is just coming out of the market. But Brisbane, Southeast Queensland is still one of the better performed areas. In terms of the Sunshine Coast, we have seen some evidence of a market cooling a little bit more on the Sunshine Coast, and we've seen the market holding up much better on the Gold Coast. So I've heard some anecdotes from agents up here that people have moved from the likes of Melbourne and Sydney to the Sunshine Coast and now find that going to the beach every day but having no local sport is too boring. And there's a little bit of homesickness to go back to Sydney and Melbourne now that things are opening back up, you know, sports are back on. And all those cultural events are back on as well. So I think that will be a trend to watch. But generally speaking, we're expecting that Southeast Queensland property market's probably going to see prices rise somewhere between 7 and 11% this year.
Okay, that's pretty good. And the supply side stuff, now we've had some builders and I've been talking about the supply shocks that are coming in and affecting the construction industry up in Queensland. There has been predicted that there will be more builders that go under. They physically won't be able to pass on the costs that they are feeling from the supply side. That's supply chain issues, that's China, that's Ukraine, that's everything that's going on. Do you see that supply shortage, are you factoring anything into that, into your Queensland numbers?
Yeah, definitely. And I've just been doing a bunch of presentations around the country, actually, to our developer customers, and, you know, they're all feeling it. You ask them, you know, when are these supply issues going to sort themselves out? And they kind of stare blankly at you and say, 2023, we hope. So I think these are going to be challenges. And I think for the established property market, it's potentially a positive because what we have seen over the last couple of years is a lot of people have been going and buying new homes because they couldn't find what they wanted in the established market. But I think as there's more and more stories getting out about, you know, I thought I was going to be paying $250,000 for a build, but it ended up being $300,000 because of all these supply shortages. It's going to get tougher in that new housing sector for people to go and buy those properties just because of that uncertainty. And as you said, we've already seen a number of builders fall over, and I think that there are quite a lot of headwinds in that new housing space over the next couple of years.
Okay. Now let's keep on moving around to the left. Anything in Darwin?
So the Darwin property market has slowed quite a bit. You know, it's been one of the weaker performing markets for the best part of the last decade. It did get a COVID bounce. A lot of people relocated to Darwin from places like Victoria. It's obviously got really strong rental yields as well. But it has started to cool, and we think that that market's going to continue to cool. Our expectation is that prices are going to rise about 4 to 7% in Darwin and the Northern Territory this year.
Okay, that's pretty good. West Australia, my favourite place in the whole world. They know how I feel about them as well. That's okay. This podcast doesn't rate well in WA. They know how I feel about them. Go on, no, Tom. I'm just joking. G'day, everyone out there.
Yeah, WA, you know, it's a lot like Darwin. It's had a really tough last decade in terms of the housing market. It saw a lot of people leaving Western Australia for other parts of the country. And I think it did get a bit of a bounce. So I was just looking at some numbers. Prices did eclipse their previous peak, which was achieved back in 2014, but only just. And the market turned quite early in Western Australia and Perth. And we're now starting to see prices fall. And I think even though COVID was positive for the housing market in terms of an increase in demand and increase in sales and increased prices, we still haven't addressed the challenges that Western Australia ultimately has, and that's that it's not a very diversified economy and it's very remote. So when you think about places like Southeast Queensland, Adelaide or Tasmania, now people that are working remotely could relocate to those areas from Sydney or Melbourne and, you know, could jump on a plane and be back in Sydney and Melbourne a couple of days a week if they needed to be. But it's just that tyranny of distance with Western Australia. It's a lot harder to do that and locate yourself in Western Australia and have to be travelling back to the East Coast on a regular basis. And ultimately, you're largely a resources economy as well. So I still think that the underlying broader issues that Western Australia have are still there. And I think that the market's going to continue to weaken in terms of prices over the next 12 or 18 months.
Okay, that couldn't happen to a nicer group of people. I'm joking, obviously. Please don't write in. I know you will. Now, moving to South Australia.
Yeah, South Australia is typically the really boring market. It's never the best performing housing market, and it's never the worst performing housing market. I could probably make a few jokes there, but
I've got them lined up, mate. Yeah, keep it going.
I'll leave those to you. But in terms of right now, it's probably the strongest performing capital city housing market in the country. Price growth has slowed a little bit. We're still seeing a lot of sales. In terms of our indicators of demand, they're all still really strong in Adelaide as well. And I think that's just the fact, again, as I was talking about with Western Australia, you know, you could be based in Adelaide but work in Melbourne or Sydney, and the cost of housing in Adelaide is so much cheaper than most other parts of the country that it's making it quite desirable at the moment.
Okay. We'll go Tassie.
Yeah, so Tassie has been the best performing market for the best part of the last 6 years, and it just continues to see ongoing price growth. Again, it has slowed a little bit, but the ultimate thing that's happening in Tasmania is a lot of people want to buy properties in Tasmania, and not a lot of people want to sell properties in Tasmania. So there's a lot more people sniffing around trying to buy properties than there are people willing to sell. And you've got that supply and demand imbalance, and that's pushing up prices. And, you know, 5 years ago, Hobart was easily the cheapest capital city in the country. It's now, the median price is now more expensive than Brisbane, more expensive than Adelaide, more expensive than Perth, more expensive than Darwin. And the popularity of Tasmania just doesn't seem to be waning.
Yeah, it has so much going for it down there, and I've got relatives that moved down there many years ago, and I've only been able to get down there rarely. And every time I do, I just think Tasmania is just probably a place where I just want to park. I just want to park myself here.
Everyone that's ever visited there feels the same way. It's just such a great lifestyle. You know, Hobart's such a beautiful city, but there's so many other beautiful parts of the state as well. So it's no surprise that so many people want to own property down there.
All right. Well, we'll get the ferry from Devonport up to Melbourne and talk about Victoria.
Yeah. So I think Melbourne's had a really interesting last couple of years. COVID lockdowns, obviously it was the most or the second most lockdown city in the world. And that did affect the property market. We did see during those lockdowns that people weren't prepared to bring properties to the market. So the number of new properties coming onto the market was extremely low. since the end of lockdowns last year, we have seen a real massive surge in the number of new property listings coming to market. People talk about all this pent-up demand during lockdowns, but there was a huge amount of pent-up supply from people that would have listed. I think also now both Sydney and Melbourne are feeling this a bit, that there's this urgency because we know that interest rate hikes are coming. A lot of vendors want to get their properties on the market now and get them sold before those interest rate hikes come through the system. And what we found is this big increase in supply has brought closer to equilibrium the level of demand for properties and the level of supply. And that's taken quite a lot of heat out of the market. So the last couple of months, you know, prices have only been rising in Melbourne by, you know, 0.1%. So it's really slowed down the rate of price growth in the market. But that's obviously probably a good thing given how strong price growth has been in both Melbourne and Sydney over the past decade or so.
And finishing it off with New South Wales.
Yeah, so Canberra is still going.
ACT, sorry, yes, of course.
You better not forget the ACT. So Canberra's.
Yeah, they wouldn't forget about me, mate. Sorry.
Canberra's doing a lot like Brisbane and Adelaide. We're still seeing prices rise, although the pace of growth has slowed a little bit. But we've still got a really big disconnect between the amount of demand in the market and the level of supply. Prices are quite high. Interestingly, the best performing market in New South Wales is the capital region, SA4 region, which is, you know, Queanbeyan, Goulburn. So all of those locations around Canberra are seeing really strong market conditions as well. And then if we jump to the big brother in Sydney, Sydney's going very similar to what we're seeing in Melbourne. We have seen quite strong price growth over the last couple of years. It wasn't locked down anywhere near as much as Melbourne was, but we did see a lot of pent-up supply of stock for sale released as we got to the end of lockdowns. And now we are seeing a better balance between the number of people wanting to buy properties and the number of people wanting to sell properties. And that has taken some of the monthly heat out of the market, and prices are not rising as rapidly as they were. And in both Sydney and Melbourne, we're expecting prices to rise 4 to 7% this year. It started the year reasonably strongly, and we think the second half of the year is going to be weaker conditions for both of those cities.
So you don't think that it's peaked in New South Wales or in Sydney?
I think if it hasn't peaked, it's probably peaking this month or next month. So I think we're right at the peak, and the same goes for Melbourne as well.
Yeah, I'm looking at, and I'll post this on the website, click on the BIP show on the Wheel and Capital website, that I'm looking at something it's daily house prices from CoreLogic that is showing that. I'm just looking at, I've got a blue line for Sydney that's showing that it looks like it to have plateaued. Melbourne looks like it's plateaued as well. Brisbane, Gold Coast still trending super high. Adelaide also trending high as well. And Perth looks to be ticking in the upwards direction too. So I think that's concurring with your sentiments on that one as well, Cam, it looks like the most important cities in Australia, Sydney and Melbourne, I'm joking, obviously. Don't write in. I know you will anyway. Thank you. But that's off a common base. It just looks like there's a bit of a plateau in Sydney and Melbourne. So that's something to take into mind. Now, do you want to talk about regional Australia? What's anything happening out, any areas or parts of Australia that you'd prefer at the moment?
Well, I think if we look at the data, places like Gold Coast are holding up really strongly. We know that right throughout the pandemic, there has been this push to regional markets, but a number of the regional markets that were very popular during the pandemic, we're starting to see things cool off. So some good examples of this, I mentioned Sunshine Coast. It's just not quite as strong as it was. Demand's not there. Sales volumes are falling a bit. And we're seeing very similar trends in markets like Geelong. We're also seeing it in Richmond Tweed, which obviously we know Byron Bay went crazy early in the pandemic, although there's also been some flooding in the Richmond Tweed region more recently. And then there's other markets as well, like Bunbury in Western Australia. It was quite strong during the early stage of the pandemic as well. It's eased off a little bit. Southern Highlands and Shoalhaven was absolutely going gangbusters 12 months ago as well. And that market has definitely cooled off as well. Sales volumes have started to fall. The level of demand in that market's pulled back. And I wonder if this is the impact of the reopening, but also the impact of people moving to these areas during the pandemic. And now maybe as things are starting to happen again in the big capital cities, starting to feel a little bit homesick for those areas. I also think that you've got that a lot of people moved early in the pandemic, but you don't have that same volume now looking to move out of the capital cities because capital cities are largely back to normal. You know, pubs are open again, football's back on, all the sporting events are back, comedy shows are back, and people are really valuing those things again now after 2 years of the pandemic where pretty much nothing happened.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so there is the, and also you mentioned Queanbeyan before showing amazing strength. We all know Queanbeyan. There's what is the thing? My brother-in-law has a place down there. He's with the military, and I won't mention which branch he's with. But you have to live outside the ACT if you're going to have housing. I'm just trying to think about why the growth there is so strong. Anyway, moving on. The election is coming up. It can't possibly be avoided, unfortunately. So the election the election cycle tees off. Mate, I saw the ABC yesterday when I was donating blood, and they ran a 20-minute piece on what happens to the Labor campaign if Albo gets COVID. And I was just like, of all the nonsense stuff, seriously, guys, there's got to be something better to cover than this massive hypothetical situation. But how much of the election are you factoring into your dim sums?
Yeah, pretty much nothing. Everything that we're hearing,
that's the spirit.
Everything that we're hearing is that, you know, no one wants to touch property too much in this election. We saw the home deposit scheme. I think it's been rebranded as an expansion of that announced in the budget. But I think people have been burned on property over the last couple of elections, particularly the Labor Party. So they're not saying too much. Mm. I think the Liberal Party aren't saying too much either. I think there's a lot of other things for everyone to focus on. And no matter who wins, I don't think it's going to change too much around property. Obviously, if you do get the Labor Party winning, there'll probably be announcements around more social housing. But, you know, I think largely it's just business as usual for the property market, dependent on whoever wins. I don't think anything's going to be too different.
Well, I've got the hypothetical situation that I put in front of Adelaide Timbrell last week was that governments, there's an old saying that we had as a former political hack as I am, there's an old saying that we have, which is that oppositions don't win elections, governments lose elections. And that was true at the last election, that was a rare opportunity where the government failed to lose an election, which they were absolutely going to get thrashed at, simply because the Labor just went out with policies that people didn't actually want to hear at that time. We know what they're talking about. Negative gearing, we're talking about franking credits.
Yeah.
I posed this to Adelaide last week, that if there is a red wave, and we've seen what happened in South Australia a few weeks ago, an absolute sweep in the direction of the Labor Party, the real vote against the coalition over there, various reasons, whatever you want to say. If that same thing happens here at a federal level, potentially you're going to have Labor with an amazing mandate and the amazing flexibility to say, you know what, we're going to start getting rid of some of these things that we talked about doing at the last election, and we've got a mandate to do it now in such a huge majority that it's not going to bother us. If they knock out negative gearing, just off the top of your head, mate, what do you see as being the potential fallout from that?
Yeah, I think if they were to knock out negative gearing, most of the modelling says that it impacts prices, you know, anywhere between about 4% and 7%. So obviously that would reduce prices. I think it would be an interesting decision to do that right now because there really is a lot of trouble in the rental market. People that are looking for rents are finding it very hard to find properties. We are seeing investors coming back into the market, but there is such a shortage of rental supply that I think it would be pretty thwart to do something like that at the moment. But if there was a huge mandate, I could definitely see potentially the Labor Party looking at scrapping stamp duty, making some other changes. I don't think negative gearing would be one they would touch right now, but I don't know the inner workings of the Labor Party either, so really knows.
I don't even think the Labor Party knows the inner workings of the Labor Party at the moment, mate. But potentially that they're going to be the next government. They're short odds to form government at the next election, so it's definitely something to factor in what the small changes that they're going to make. But I think that you are correct, just from myself, from an investment standpoint. I don't think they're going to do too much to rock the boat in a rate rising environment when you already know that things can be a little bit tenuous because you are trying to slow stuff down. One of the fallouts from that is going to be the property market, a little bit, in that you're just trying to subdue this stuff. I think that you could be right. You don't want to try and rock the boat too much for that one, but you never know what sort of crazy people work with in that one. Yeah. Cameron, mate, I'm not going to take up any more of your time, mate. That was a good around the grounds list. Is there anything else you want to go through?
No, I think that's everything. We covered everything. I think maybe the only other thing to touch on I just mentioned was what's happening in the rental market. And we are seeing across the country, we're now starting to see rents rising in places like Sydney and Melbourne, which have really seen some large falls through COVID. Again, now that overseas migration's coming back, now that universities are back in person, we're seeing a lot of rental pressures becoming evident in those inner city markets. And we can't really see any sign of an improvement in the rental market, at least from a renter's perspective, over the coming few years. During COVID, a lot of investors bailed out of the market and a lot of owner-occupiers bought those properties. And yep. Now we're in a situation where there's a real lack of rental supply, and that's pushing up rents quite rapidly. And we haven't seen a lot of new development of, one and two bedroom apartments over the last couple of years. Developers have largely tilted, particularly in the apartment space, to owner-occupier style property as well. So there's some real challenges in the rental market, and we need to look at what we can do, whether that be bumping up Commonwealth rental assistance, whether that be more social housing, but anything around building, that's going to take time to get that stock to the market and alleviate some of these pressures we're feeling at the moment.
Okay, and just to wrap it up, last question, and putting you on the spot here, but how do you make housing more affordable? I sort of going with the theme of asking Adelaide what she'd do if she was head of the RBA, affordability is obviously a problem in this country. It has been acknowledged that, unless you want to disagree with me, and then I'm happy to talk about that. But how do you fix the affordability issue that we have in this country? I want kids in houses buying stuff. That's what yep. forms an economy.
So essentially, the affordability challenge at the moment is for anyone trying to enter the market for the first time or left the market to re-enter, and that's because prices are rising at a much faster level than wages. How do you fix affordability? Well, ultimately, you bring property prices down. That's the best way to do it. But politically, that's not a palatable solution because you'd lose a lot of votes doing that. So I think what we're trying to see now is governments trying to find ways to help people into the market. And we're looking at, only having to pay 5% lender's mortgage insurance. For a number of years now, state governments have been providing stamp duty concessions or not having to pay stamp duty at all if you buy or build a brand new property. So I think more broadly what we need to do is look at LMI, look at stamp duty and removing stamp duty, and that's the best way, absent prices falling, which I don't think is politically palatable. I don't think you can frame it as improving affordability, but allowing more people access to home ownership. And that's the sort of policies that we should be going down the path of. But we need to be very careful that chasing those policies doesn't just inflate prices further. We've seen in the past, first-time owners grants, they tend to just push prices higher. And we need to find ways to get more people into housing without putting more pressure on property prices.
Yeah, it's going to be continue to be the situation that we have in this country and in Canada and in New Zealand, where it is all going. If someone figures out how to fix the problem, I'm sure they would have told us by now. look, Cameron, mate, unless you want to talk about the football, I'm not going to take up any more of your time.
I don't think there's too much to talk about in the footy at the moment, but not from my perspective anyway. But no, it's been great to chat to you, James, and really appreciated the chat.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. Cameron Kushar, Executive Manager, Economic Research at REA Group. Thank you so much for joining us, mate.
Thanks.
This show is sponsored by Bridge Street Capital Partners. Give us a call, specialising in equity capital market transactions for small cap companies listed on the ASX, primarily mining, energy and tech sectors. If you're a sophisticated investor, and I know you are because you're listening to this show, and you want to hear more about Bridge Street's upcoming capital raises, they just did one that was actually pretty good, please send your details to invest@bridgestreetcapital.com.au. I'm going to wrap the show up now. Look, if you want to get in touch with us, it's at the BIP show. You know where it is. If you want to know more about the show, go to Wheel and Capital, search Wheel and Capital. It's at the BIP show. And look, that's it. I'm not going to take up any more of your time. Don't forget to hit rate and review. Make sure we get those 5-star ratings. They are sensational. If you need anything else, please just drop me a note. Otherwise, thanks very much for listening and have yourself a great day.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.